You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's rock and roll, literally and figuratively. We're going to send it to Las Vegas, Nevada. Ted Savransky bats leadoff on the program. We've got the NIT final tonight from Madison Square Garden. We have a couple of very interesting NBA games tonight, including the scorching Portland Trail Blazers. Blazers have been killing it for the last 3 weeks. They get a red-hot Houston Rocket club coming in off a loss against the Golden State Warriors. But, hey, who doesn't lose to the Golden State Warriors? We gave you the Warriors on the program yesterday pretty much solely because the Warriors are getting 4.5 points. And even though the Warriors played the night before in Houston, it was a double revenge spot for the Golden State Warriors that they were in. And I wasn't feeling too good, man, early in the game. What was it, 15-0? Listen, you guys know, yesterday I was a little beaten down. So last night I'm lying there near certain death on the couch. And I'm like, oh, man, you telling me it's 33-6 in this battle? Like the score was impossible, but hey, somehow Golden State came back. So we'll talk some NBA basketball this evening. Coach Nick is going to step up and then join us. B-ball breakdown, always good when Nick has time to break down some basketball with us. And we're going to be joined by a man that they called Nails, Lenny Dykstra. Lenny Dykstra, one of the most interesting post-Major League Baseball career players out there. Lenny Dykstra, you name it, he's done it, literally and figuratively. Lenny Dykstra is going to hop up and hit and join us. And we're just going to throw a bunch of names at Lenny, ask him a bunch of crazy questions. His book is insane. Basically, we're going to ask Lenny Dykstra about the time that he did cocaine with Robert De Niro. That's the type of book that he has. Lenny's not afraid to throw anybody under the bus or give them props and tell it like it is. So, yeah, Lenny Dykstra on the program today as well. But we've spent a lot of time this week talking about the Raiders situation and talking about Las Vegas. Of course, the Raiders leaving Oakland. Will be going to Vegas. How soon is the stadium going to be ready in Vegas? They're not sure. Initial reports were 2 years. Now it's 3 years. There's talk about playing at Levi Stadium. We've gone through this, but, you know, Levi Stadium, that's not any better. Like, people in the Bay Area don't like you. Like, moving across the bridge isn't going to help. That's why people are mad at the Warriors for leaving. Like, the Warriors are leaving Oakland, but they're crossing the bridge. And the Warriors used to be in San Francisco, and then they crossed the bridge. You know, you can get away with crossing the bridge. You can't get away with changing states, though. But if they go to San Antonio, are they the San Antonio Raiders for the next couple of years? Are they Las Vegas Raiders? In San Antonio, like, I don't know. But anyways, you know, it'll sort itself out, just like the Tony Romo situation will sort itself out. And I told you guys, it was more advantageous for the Dallas Cowboys to hang on to Tony Romo until June as far as salary cap purposes were concerned. I was surprised. The rumors came out a couple of days before, what was it, March 9th, 10th, 11th, whatever it was, when they could officially let Romo go. Oh, we're going to let him go. Like, they're torturing this dude now. They're torturing him. Yeah, we're going to let you go. And I mean, we're not going to let you go. And basically, there's only two teams in the National Football League that want Tony Romo. And it doesn't appear as though they're going to do anything crazy to get him in all actuality. I think they're playing the waiting game. Because if you're the Houston Texans, you got to get him. You got to get him. But they're not going to be held hostage to get him because they know the Cowboys are going to let him go anyways eventually. And similar situation with the Denver Broncos. But now we have a third team who wants Tony Romo. Except it's not a football team. It's CBS Television. Now, Ian Rapoport of, I guess, NFL Network, I think he reported yesterday or the day before that Fox Television has approached Tony Romo. And Fox said, we'll make you the number two guy. You know, you got Buck and you got Aikman, so I guess they want another Dallas Cowboy quarterback. And Romo would immediately become the number two guy on the second team on Fox, replacing John Lynch, who's now the general manager of the San Francisco 49ers. But CBS also wants Romo, and they're willing to throw Phil Simms under the bus. And it's amazing because I know I'm sure a lot of people really don't care where Tony Romo goes. But a lot of people right now are probably thinking, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. Poor Phil Simms. And listen, you know, Phil Simms is Phil Simms. I'm not going to stand it. It's low-hanging fruit for me to start taking pot shots at Phil Simms. You know, when's the last time Phil Simms added something? You're like, you know, that's a damn good point that Phil Simms just made. He doesn't. He doesn't even finish his sentences. Kind of just trails off. But nevertheless, I kind of feel bad for Phil Simms. Phil Simms isn't like, you know, he's not like terrible, awful. You know, he was a good NFL quarterback. His success in the Super Bowl. He's been around the game. He just shouldn't be the number one guy. That's the thing. He shouldn't be the showcase guy. You know, the biggest thing is, yeah, he doesn't add very much, but he's boring as hell. And, you know, Jim Nance is a pro, but Jim Nance is as bland as a, you know, as what, vanilla freaking ice cream cone. Doesn't get any more bland than Jimmy Nance. So I actually somewhat feel bad for Phil Simms. But ultimately, why is Tony Romo going to take any of these jobs? You take these TV jobs because they're hard to get. And, you know, maybe you're at the end of their career, you're a retired player, you want those jobs. Tony Romo doesn't care about the money. He already has money. So he's not in a hurry. Oh, I better take that $7 million a year from CBS or Fox. He doesn't care about the money. He wants to play football. The guy's only 36 years old still. Yeah, he's a little beaten up, but let's get carried away. He's not ready for the booth just yet as much as people want him to be. And ultimately, I still think he will end up as a Houston Texan because, you know, really? You guys have all the pieces for a potential Super Bowl run, but Tom Savage, you know, ain't part of it. Game time decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. We are live, and we've got a very lively show for you today. Coach Nick is a great guest, one of the best basketball analysts out there. He lights it up online over at YouTube. People love his breakdowns. Coach Nick, bballbreakdown.com, will join us. Lenny Dykstra, a.k.a. Nails. Nails on the radar today. And we've got Ted Savransky. And, of course, Major League Baseball regular season play begins this Sunday. I'm fired up for some baseball. College basketball winding down. We've got the NIT final tonight. We've got CIB and CIT action tomorrow. And then on Saturday, of course, it's the Final Four. So let's send it over to Las Vegas, Nevada, that we spent a lot of time talking about the city of Vegas on this network this week. And I had another Vegas story I wanted to get to, and I'll bring it up with Teddy right now, actually. But Teddy, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. We have the Las Vegas Raiders, dude. Of course you're talking about Vegas this week. Something that I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. 5 years ago, you could have given me 100-1. I wouldn't have wanted any piece of the Las Vegas Raiders.
Right. And Teddy, so, like in the past few years, gone from will there ever be any professional sports team here to two sports teams.
Look, it was 2 years ago that they were telling Tony Romo that he couldn't step foot in a casino to be in a fantasy foot, not a betting, a fantasy football conference in Vegas. You understand? That wasn't 10 years ago or 20, 2 years ago. Okay. Two months ago, with Goodell's publicly saying, oh, we don't want any part of the betting. We don't want any part of Las Vegas. But money talks, $750 of public money. And thankfully, I have to say, as a taxpayer here in Las Vegas, it's your guys' money. It's a hotel tax. It's not anything the locals are going to pay. So thanks for paying for our NFL team.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I know. You're welcome, Teddy. So now, yeah, the resort fee at stations just went from 18 to 23. The resort fee. Better get a ticket thrown in there for that. But it's funny you say that. The hypocrisy of, you know, it's always been ridiculous. But I think this has big ramifications, Teddy, on a couple of aspects. I think for legalized sports betting right now across the United States, the National Football League and Roger Goodell was always the most vocal of all the commissioners. You and I have talked about this. Manfred's been kicking the tires on gambling for a while. He's had studies in Britain, the guys that monitor the books, monitoring baseball so we can understand the model, how it works. Silver, I mean, hell, Adam Silver's talked about wanting to let people bet when they buy popcorn in the arena. It's always been Goodell. It's bad for America. The sky's going to fall. No, 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 no. He can't say that anymore. When Chris Christie wants to take sports bets in Atlantic City, I don't see how Goodell's argument is gone. Goodell's argument is gone. To me, this leads to legalized sports wagering.
It's when it comes to the potential for a paradigm shift, I've been in Las Vegas since 1998, and the Raiders' move to Vegas is without a doubt the single biggest, the seminal event when it comes to the potential for broader legalized sports betting. That being said, I'm still not betting the yes.
I know. Because, Sheldon Adelson didn't want to give the $750 million, and he's also not going to want legalized sports gambling everywhere.
Well, and it's ironic because the one thing that Las Vegas has learned over the last 20 years is that when local casinos open, it doesn't siphon off the business from Las Vegas. It whets the appetite for Las Vegas. You understand, Vegas used to be lobbying against all the Indian casinos and all the local casinos around the country because they wanted Vegas to be the destination for gamblers. And what they've realized is it's okay to have, you know, feeder leagues.
Yeah.
You know, you whet your appetite at home and then you want the real deal in Vegas. So, you know, Adelson certainly is a guy who has a lot of influence within the state of Nevada, but he's not the only one. And when you talk about the potential for a broader legalization, my biggest issue is there's no constituency for it other than us. And unless there's a lot of people making a lot of money off it, the momentum to get something like that through Congress, it needs lobbying dollars. And the dollars.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Cantor's like, we got our own problems already. We don't need to expand. Okay, so last thing about this in Vegas, and it's funny because I see it was what's the guy's name? The former UNLV Livingwood. What's the former?
Yeah, Livingwood.
Yeah. All right. So I saw him talking about applying to get NCAA tournament games in Vegas, and in the future potentially an NCAA championship, or Final Four, etc. You know, tournament games. And the NCAA is like, no. And it turns out they did it once in 1991 with the women's tournament. And they have a really interesting proposal because they're like, listen, you really want to get interested in a women's tournament? Let's have the Sweet 16 all the way to the championship in Vegas. People will come. And you talk about lobbying. Mark Few of Gonzaga said that our fans wouldn't be going if it was elsewhere. They love going to the conference tournament in Vegas every year. We see it all the time with the New Mexico fans. They love it. You go down the list, and the NCAA is saying no. But it's just comical. You play the Pac-12 tourney there. You play the WCC there. You play the Mountain West there, etc. Not NCAA-controlled entities. But, you know, Teddy, it's obvious now. The NCAA's got to get on this. Because to me, I mean, think, man, a Super Bowl in Vegas is going to be insane. And then, you know, maybe not a Final Four at T-Mobile Arena, but, you know, Elite Eight and at least regional games.
Oh, I'm with you 100%.
And in the football stadium. And in the dome football stadium, you could have the Final Four, actually.
There's potential for all of that.
Yeah.
But the word that we have to use is potential. And when it comes to, like, how these dominoes are going to fall, look, Silver and Manfred are probably on our side right now. You know, Goodell, you know, again, 2 months ago, he's testifying, you can't have legal betting. You can't have football around legal betting. It's the, it's not the betting itself. It's the perception of the betting. So, you know, the NFL domino would have to fall before the college hoops domino would fall. I love the Sweet 16 idea for the women's tournament. I think it would be a draw, and I think they would get fans. And instead of being a money-losing proposition, it would be a money-winning proposition. But when we start to point out hypocrisies, I mean, we could point them out all day. It's not going to do us any good.
Well, it's just funny. Yeah, the NCAA, oh, no, we can't have a tournament game in Vegas because there's gambling. Yeah, well, the teams that are determining who's getting in your tournament just played in Vegas. So
yeah, three of them, yeah. And they're all well-attended. They all make money. The leagues have moved out of Vegas and moved back to Vegas because
– USA Basketball, Las Vegas is the headquarters now. Like, the Dream Teams and the Olympic teams, they prepare in Vegas. But anyways.
Summer League, too.
Yeah, Summer League, exactly. It's a basketball capital. And I think the NBA will eventually get there. NIT final tonight in a city that you can't legalize, legally bet. But there's a lot of guys named Vinny taking bets. So Georgia Tech and TCU tonight. It's amazing. Jamie Dixon, man, a guy like Malinsky brought up, he's won more on this this floor than Hornacek has with the Knicks. Dixon's got 27 career wins at Madison Square Garden.
that's really funny.
27 career wins. He's 27 and 15 on this court.
That's, That doesn't. I mean, think about all those great runs Pitt had in the Big East tournament.
Exactly. He won it
year
once,
after
yeah.
year, they're running to the finals in that tournament.
We'll pick up the pace here a bit, Teddy, but tough game tonight. Georgia Tech, a real good defensive team. TCU, I'm more impressed with TCU in against UCF than I am with Tech beating Bakersfield. It's up to 4 points. I don't know. What's your take on this game?
Yeah, I've had a lean towards the Horned Frogs. I lean towards the under. But I'm not in love with either one. This is a really good defensive team. We look at their Georgia Tech is too. Don't get me wrong. Georgia Tech's defensive numbers were comparable with all the elite teams in the NCAA tournament. They finished number 6 in the country in adjusted defensive.
5 straight teams have shot 40% or less against Tech.
But TCU's offense is better than anything they faced. It's good or better than anything they faced. And when you see what they did the other day, 20 assists on 26 made baskets for Jamie Dixon's squad. I'm just not looking to bet against TCU in this venue. I think they are the better of these two teams. But the price isn't right. This game has all the potential to come down to a final shot or a final possession or two.
Yeah.
I'm not in love with laying 4 in this instance. And I lean under. Obviously, we're talking about two very good defensive teams. I trust the TCU offense to generate more than I do the Georgia Tech offense. But it's not a game where I think either team is going to be pushing the pace up and down the floor. And it's not a game where I would expect either team to be particularly offensively efficient.
Teddy, the South Carolina Gamecocks and Gonzaga, numbers going up a little bit. A lot of people like Gonzaga in this spot. They think the Cinderella glass slipper's about to smash right now on the Gamecocks. I'm interested about the total in this basketball game. It's 138, and man, I can see this game being like a real freaking battle to get points. It could be really, really low scoring, but maybe it isn't. But we throw in, this is the first time in the past tournaments, Teddy, they've sometimes played some of the Elite Eight games and stuff in football stadiums, but they didn't this year. We had nothing but nice basketball arenas and NBA arenas and nice soft rims and stuff. Man, when was the last they haven't played a Final Four here? What, since like 90, ever? I was reading, it's the first time like in the West Coast, like in a long time, actually. So, the rims, the sight lines. What do you make of this, Teddy?
No concerns. No concerns whatsoever. When it comes to the defensive acumen of these two teams, Gonzaga, South Carolina, number 1 in adjusted defense versus number 2 in adjusted defense.
Well, that's the thing. The Gamecocks are 9-3 to the under in their last 12 non-conference games. Gonzaga 20-8 to the under in their last 28 non-conference games. They're both grinders. They're both defensive teams. And it's going to be a freaking battle here.
Yes. But when we think about that, and that my first react gut was absolutely, look at the under in this game. Look at the under in this game. You start to think of it, then you start to try to put yourself in the coach's heads. All right. If you're Mark Few, what's the one thing you don't want to do against South Carolina? You don't want to get into a grinder game.
No, you don't want to play half court. If I'm Few, I'm telling them, let's push the ball on these guys. Don't let them set up. Yeah.
Every single potential opportunity.
And I guess the same thing for South Carolina, because Gonzaga is so big, right? They don't want to set it up and slow it down.
Exactly. South Carolina, and of the two, I'm confident. When you look at what have the Gamecocks done in this tournament? A team that didn't average 70 points per game in the regular season has averaged 82 points here in the tournament.
Yeah.
A team that didn't shoot well all year has shot really well in the tournament. What have they done? They pushed the tempo against good defensive teams, and I expect them to do it again here. So while the matchups say under, I think the pace in this game might end up saying over.
Is the point spread starting to scare you off Gonzaga a little bit?
Well, I mean, look, when you look at the 4 teams still standing, and you go back, I like to do it at the end of the year, is go back and take a look at the beginning of the year. And you look at the beginning of the year, the other 3 teams, Gonzaga, North Carolina, Oregon, all top 10, top 15 squads, and there's South Carolina projected to be the number 9 team in the SEC. From that type of standpoint, and you can maybe make a case that this number isn't too high. But if we're talking about current form, no team has played better in this tournament than South Carolina. None. I don't care if you can point anybody. No. The Gamecocks have played the best basketball in this tournament. And when you look at what they've done, beating Duke, beating Baylor, and then, beating Florida, all as underdogs, it's certainly, I can understand the case that you can make for South Carolina. If they play to their current form, They could win this game, let alone covering the point spread.
You know what's crazy about South Carolina? You're right. They not only have they won, they're dominating in the sense that they broke the will of each team that they played. You know what I mean? It's like a street fight at some point. You know, Duke were like, we can't catch up. It's just, it's, you know, we can't overcome this. Baylor just wilted. And even Florida. Florida went toe-to-toe with them. But eventually, you know what? South Carolina was the one. Florida were the kids on the bench sitting with their hands down. Like, God, these guys are relentless. They're in our face. Like, it's, you know, they're really just in your face, South Carolina, right now. You know, an epic run. All right, so we got Oregon and North Carolina in this game, and this is the Phil Knight game. Either way, Nike wins, man. He's, you know, he's the Ducks, or it's Michael Jordan that he's made $2 gazillion off of with his Nike shoes. So the Nike powerhouse here, Teddy, going against each other.
Well, it's a situation with Oregon and North Carolina. Both squads match up fairly well against the opponent. You know, we look at Oregon. This is the game that Oregon misses Chris Boucher. You know, when North Carolina, I'm not going to call him a one-trick pony because Barry's been good at the point here in the postseason. You know, at times during the regular season, I'm like, mediocre.
Yeah.
He's been good. And when Barry's good, that gives it means that they're a two-trick pony. But if you look at what this North Carolina team's really been about all year, they've been about dominating the offensive glass. And I mean dominating the offensive glass. No team in the country has been close to putting up North Carolina's offensive rebounding numbers. And what happens when you have an offense that doesn't turn the ball over and crashes the offensive glass hard? You get more possessions than your opponents do. And those more possessions lead to more points and you win a whole bunch of games. That's what North Carolina does. And the fact that Oregon doesn't have Boucher for this game, they will miss him. They will need him against, you know, the Kennedy Meeks and company down low. But, man, you look at the Ducks and you talk about guys that are having great tournaments. You know, Dorsey's having, in my mind, he's the MOP of the tournament. He's been the best player so far. He's carried that team. And when you have Dorsey and Dylan Brooks, two guys with NBA potential for Oregon, but it's not just that duo. They spread the floor and give bigs trouble. That's how they've won all season. Their versatility with the lineups. And look, Altman versus Roy Williams with extra time to prepare, you know, advantage Oregon in that instance. So I do think that the Ducks are going to be able to create some matchup problems for North Carolina defensively. No surprise, this total's been steamed to the over. What, 148.5? Now we're looking at 152s, and I agree with that move.
Ted Savransky, a.k.a. Teddy Covers. You can find him over at sportsmemo.com, as well as he's one of the covers experts to see what he's got going on. He's had a hell of a run throughout the tournament. I'm sure it'll continue through the weekend. Always a pleasure, Teddy. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us.
Cheers.
There's Ted Savransky, Teddy. Tyler Dorsey. You know, now it's the Final Four. A lot of books will have props up, right? Game props and player props, etc. Something to keep your eye on with Dorsey. Tyler Dorsey scored 20 or more points in 7 straight games right now. An epic tournament run this kid has been on and continued through the Pac-12 tournament. We take a quick break. We come back with Nails, Lenny Dykstra. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morency. You know what? I've been looking forward to this guy joining us all week. We've known he's going to be coming on for a couple of days. His book, House of Nails, A Memoir of Life on the Edge, is off the freaking hook, man. All kinds of crazy stories. If you didn't think it was like Lenny Dykes, if you took Lenny's name out and you read the book, you'd almost think you were reading Nikki Sixx's book from Motley Crue. But Lenny Dykstra likes to rock and roll. He keeps on grinding. And, of course, he's known as Nails, 3-time All-Star, 2-time World Series champion, and 2 pretty memorable World Series champions as well, 86 Mets and 93 Phillies. Lenny Dykstra steps up and in. How you doing, Lenny?
Hey, good. Thanks for having me, Gabriel. But I got to correct you on one thing. We went to the World Series in 93. But this team in Canada named the Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh, yeah, it was
like I was out in the field, so I
I'm bad for years. Yeah, I'm sorry to bring up 93. I should have remembered with Toronto winning.
It actually was like my best year of my career. I set all kinds of records, but at the end of the day, I got the experience what it's like to get the third out when you win a World Series on the field.
Yeah, I know, Joe.
To experience what it's like to get the not the third out and lose the World Series when you're on the field. So I didn't know, like, should I walk off? Should I run off? What do I do? Joe Carter put our lights out pretty quick there. But there was a
he's still been milking it.
Toronto was awesome.
He's been living off of it forever in Toronto. He shows up once a year and stuff. So, you know, I've always been bad with years. That's why I wouldn't go on Stump the Schwab and stuff. But, yeah, of course, you know, poor Mitch Williams. So what year was it with the Phillies?
Poor Mitch. How about people had to play behind him to turn us on to alcoholics? having to sit through that.
So you said, saw you say the other day that the Phillies team was made the Mets team look like school kids when it came to partying. So what year was the Phillies then?
Look, it started in 1993. We were on a mission, you know, and the thing is, we were all getting to be about that age at 30. When the bottom line is, you know, your body just doesn't work as good, so you have to get some help to get on the field every day and play as hard as we played. Whereas 86, I was just a young kid, you know. I mean, I was glad to be there. Like, you hear about all the stories, but, like, the guy that caught the 6-foot fish is now a 12-foot fish. Now it's a whale. Meaning, like, I never saw cocaine. I never saw drugs. I mean, we could drink a little bit, but, like, in 93, that was a whole different deal. Like, somebody needs a prescription filled, they just come to me, I'd fill it.
It's funny too. I think about the Mets exactly. Like, I can't picture like Ray Knight like really partying that hard. You know what I mean? Or like,
well, because you didn't party.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, you know, even Gary Carter. Gary's a pretty clean. You know, I saw him at the casino a couple of times, but
yeah,
he wasn't a crazy partier.
Carter was not even not crazy, not even close. I mean, Gary Carter. I got to locker. Well, I had a privilege and honor to locker next to him for 6 years and watch him strap it on every night. And he never took any drugs. He played the game as hard as anyone could play. He played hurt. And, you know, what a winning player. And he's one of the toughest guys I've ever met. In fact, I have a story. I was just young, you know, and like I can never get him to go out with me after the game. So he was saying, we were in Atlanta and he was staying two doors down from me in the team hotel. And I got back, it was real late at night. I got back and like I was getting a little hammered. And like, so I started mule kicking his door, you know, and like he finally comes to the door and like I saw a different kid, meaning like he picked me up like a little rag doll, pinned me against the wall. He said, if you ever wake me up again, I said, whoa. He like threw me down. Like, that's how strong he was. But, you know, Gary Carter was a great, great, great teammate and a great man and a great husband. It's the kind of person you want your son to grow up to be like, you know?
Yeah, you know, Gary Carter, I remember when he was in Montreal, people are like, some of his teammates used to get rubbed the wrong because he was always smiling and he's signing autographs for everybody. But he was really like that. Yeah,
cameraman. Yeah, cameraman. But you know, that's the same thing they say about Schilling. You know, like when Schilling would be pitching, Curt Schilling, when I played with him with the Phillies, he'd always the night he'd pitch, he'd come up to me and, hey, dude, how you feeling, man? I know you're gonna have a good one tonight. You know, and like all the other players would rag on him because they seemed to think he only cared about himself. Well, I wish we had five guys that just cared about themselves. He prepared. We knew what we were getting. We knew we had a chance to win every time he took the mound. So it's not. You don't have to like each other to play on the same team. You just have to perform. It all comes down to performance and results. So he got the results, so he could say whatever he wanted. You know.
Who was a player? Were you a good hungover player? Like, did it affect you? Did you just sort of sweat it out in the morning or in the afternoon or at BP? Like, were you a good hungover player? Who's a guy that
never really got drunk. I wasn't really a guy that can get drunk. In fact, but just to answer that question, remember, like, you have to like play it all the way out. So if you're gonna party, you need to have something ready the next day so you can go north and get ready and get up. So, no, the amphetamines were rampant. You know, amphetamines were rampant since baseball's inception. I mean, you know, they call them greenies. But so, yeah, so it was, you know, I had the ability to, you know, hang out till 4 in the morning and load up and get, you know, 3 hits. And people would look at me like, wow, it's the same guy. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, baseball is now completely changed. You know, drugs are not involved in baseball anymore. In fact, not even close. So, it's a good thing. I mean, but when they were, you know, it was hard for people not to take them because what do you do about the guy next to you? Like, take steroids and make $30 million and you don't do it and be a good guy and go home and get fired and get a real job and make $60,000. I mean, it's
no players,
deal, you know?
Lenny, no players are really upset, right? Like the whole, I know the media, they're, you know, ooh, they're their panties in a bunch. This guy can't get into the Hall of Fame. And steroids, though. But I remember being around clubhouses at that time. And like you said, it was more money. I remember a pitcher saying, I hope Barry Bonds hits 100 home runs. It's good for business. It's good for everybody. And he said, I'm making more money right now. It really was good for everybody, wasn't it?
Well, it's a great point you make. I mean, think about it. We're coming off a strike where we have no fan base. So they knew what was going on. I mean, balls are rocking. Come on, Brady Anderson hit 55 home runs or something, man. I mean, well, what I'm saying is, but the fans and not, again, I'm not in any way trying to, like, say it's okay to do, but let's just be real. I mean, the fans like to see action, and you get action. Now you watch a game, it's almost like, okay, take your Xanax now. Okay, get ready.
Yeah.
And our sponsor is Milk and Cookies. That's who sponsors baseball now.
How do you think you would fit in?
Slideshow? I mean, I don't even know if you're out of slideshow in baseball.
How do you think you would fit in today's clubhouse, today's players type, today's era?
I wouldn't fit in. Because I see these games, I can't watch them. Like, they're all talking to the other team. They're friends with the other teammate. Like, if you talk to another teammate when I was playing with you, we're fighting. They're trying to take our money, you know? I mean, so we had one saying when we go on the road, our motto was, we're going to go to their house, we're going to take their money, and do their women. Period. The end.
Lenny Dykstra with us. So Lenny, when I told people you're coming on, first thing people are like, oh yeah, didn't he get dirt on umpires? And I know a lot of people are like, oh no, the umpires, no, that never happened. It's not true. But your bases on balls, I was looking, the numbers did go way up in those years. So like,
By the way, it's all true. I mean, whoever says it's not true is dope. I mean,
yeah, it's kind of. I believe you. It's the same thing. Same thing about the De Niro story.
So did Harper Collins. I mean, let's see. Harper Collins had 20 lawyers like fact check everything that was written. Meaning the Robert De Niro story. I mean, yeah, you're talking about the one when we were at St. Bart's. Yeah, he didn't even know who I was. You know, it's funny. We were at St. Bart's. I was firing on all cylinders, man. I just signed a $30 million contract. I was like a Greek statue. You know, I was like 29 years old and helicopter and talent and left and right. And all of a sudden I see like a guy sitting on a deck and he says, hey, it's just two presidential suites we had. And it's De Niro. And so we start talking, and I could tell he kind of wanted what I had. And so next thing you know, I made his trip go a lot faster, let's put it that way. But when people say, oh, he denied it, well, no, really? He's going to say, what do you want to say? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I believe you more than him.
Oh, we were partying. It was the greatest thing ever. I mean, of course he's going to deny it. I mean, but you know, he didn't sue anybody, did he? Because I have like 15 people there to confirm it. But again, like I said, but I don't even think he knew who I was. That's the funny thing. Like, I don't think he knew. He's not a baseball or sports fan. He just wanted what I had.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people do.
I like, though, the part that you said you saw him outside a club and he blew you off after.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't blame him. Like, my friend said... So, no, he was at... We were having dinner, and it was one of his restaurants in Tribeca. He was there with his family. And so I went up, and it was, like, 3 months after, so... And, like, when I went up and said hi to him, I was, like, saw a ghost, and he kind of, like, pretended like he didn't know me. And so I got the picture, and he was, you know, I walked away.
So, Lenny, we only got a couple of minutes. We only got a couple of minutes here.
Rude of him. I said, what do you want him to say, man? Like, you want him to say, hey, honey, here's Lenny, here's Jerry McBarty with St. Bart's. So... Anyway, go ahead. Keep firing.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you, like you said, man, you're the type of guy, you know, in the old days, old hockey players that go out for dinner, they'd walk in a restaurant, they'd see a guy on the other team there, they'd walk out. They wouldn't even eat in the same freaking room. A guy you played against who seems to have that same type of attitude. He seems to just hate everybody, but the guy would punch his mother in the face to win a game. Roger Clemens. Do you have any Clemens stories?
Right, yeah, I hated hitting off him. How's that? The guy, you know, and there's not one right-handed pitcher I'll tell you, though, yes. He was mean, intimidating, and filthy. And the bottom line is how is he not in the Hall of Fame? I mean, how are the three best players in the history of baseball not in the Hall of Fame? I don't get it. Like, what's the threshold for what makes somebody bad enough to not be in the Hall of Fame? You know what I mean? What
yeah. Yeah, we're gonna start. It's ridiculous. It is. It's ridiculous.
I mean, come on. Like, it's Barry Bonds on the whole.
But like I said too, Lenny, and I got no problem with people like, you know, with the 70s era. But what's the difference of all the guys on 70s doing big rails in the dugout or in the bathroom and then playing? What's the difference, right?
You do. There it is. So, and what's the threshold? What about the guys that beat their wives? What about? I mean, so what is it? If you want to do a Hall of Fame for good guys, no problem. Do it. But if it's for baseball, it's got to be for baseball. And I still have a big problem with the three best players in the history of baseball not in the Hall of Fame.
All right, Lenny, we got it.
He's the most dominant guy in the world, and Pete Rose will know about him. And then, you know, of course, Bonds, his numbers are stupid. But, yeah, man, so same time next week.
Yeah,
so
let's do it. We'll get more time. We'll definitely do it here. Lenny, I really enjoyed it, man. I wish we had more time, but we don't. I'm getting the hook, but we encourage people to follow him on Twitter. Pick up the book, House of Nails, a memoir of life on the edge. Thanks for the time, Lenny.
Yeah, you want to get a hold of me, you know, when we reach 24/7, the best time to get me.
Lenny Dykstra.
Good talking. All right, man. All
hey,
right.
Thanks, Lenny. So Lenny Dykstra with us. Yeah, of course, 93. I shouldn't remember. What year did the Phillies win? Now it's bothering me, though. Somebody tell me in my earpiece there. We'll tell you when we come back with Coach Nick. But what year did the Phillies win the World Series then? All right, we'll come back with Coach Nick. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues, and our boy Reed has informed me, 2005, Philadelphia Phillies, 2005. All right, eight. What'd you say, Glenn? Oh, it's 2000. So now, I could have sworn you just told me five. Stupid numbers. I should never say years. This is what happens with years. 2008, Philadelphia Phillies. All right, Ryan Howard and that team. Okay, nevertheless, let's talk basketball right now with Coach Nick. Talk some NBA basketball. A crazy game last night. We got a big-time game tonight. Some interesting stuff, actually, Coach. It's always a pleasure, but last night, was that an epic comeback by the Warriors or an epic collapse by the San Antonio Spurs?
Well, it was an interesting confluence of events because the Warriors are coming off a back-to-back on the road in the Texas Triangle insanity. So that was natural that they would probably struggle in the very beginning to kind of keep up with the energy. But that was some of the best defense I've seen all year by any team, by the Warriors, down the last like half or like maybe last three quarters. So, you know, there's a natural regression back to the mean for the Spurs. But, I mean, the Warriors are good. But they don't have Kevin Durant yet, and so the rest of the league should be really scared.
Yeah, they should be really scared. They're seem to be dialing it in right now as the playoffs approach. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the Spurs, and I've said this before with the Spurs, as good as their record is, they have flaws when they play good teams. They take care of business against teams that they're supposed to. And they've done always, Popovich and company have always done such a great job thinking about the future and always, you know, bridging and, all right, we'll bring Aldridge in now. But they've never really addressed this point guard situation. You know, Parker, you know, has been the guy forever. And, you know, you got Parker and Mills. And to me, last night exposed how it's just not good enough, in my opinion. They're going to keep this thing really going. You know, get a young guy in here. Get an explosive guy in here, you know, a dynamic playmaker. Because to me, Parker and Mills are going to be a problem come the playoffs. And, you know, last night, combined 6 points and 2 assists.
Well, they have a guy in Murray that could be that role eventually, but they're really, you know, bringing him along slowly. But there's no question the numbers show that Patty Mills is much better on the floor than Parker is. And Popovich is just stubborn. He continues to ride Parker more than he should. And that's going to be the downfall of them, if anything. It's not going to be Patty Mills. I think it's going to be playing Pau Gasol and Tony Parker too many minutes.
All right, so speaking of the too-many-minute thing, last year LeBron, you know, people were kind of, you know, wondering, what the hell is Tyronn Lue doing? He's running his guys into the ground. And I expected we'd see less minutes for LeBron this year, but it's not happening. He's playing a ton right now. And I don't know, can they just flick a switch come the playoffs? Because, you know, they've had defensive problems all year long, but it's persistent right now. You know, 2-4 in their last six, but coach, they're giving up 114 points a game in their last six games.
No, I know. I mean, their defensive rating since January 1st, they're ranked like 27th. And so, okay, flip a switch. What does that get them to? 15th? You know, they don't flip the switch and get in the top 10 all of a sudden with the way they can play. And that means no title for them. So if they don't, I don't know what they're going to do, but it is a frightening experience going through. I'm doing a big video on them this week. And it's frightening to go through how little rotations there are on the weak side. Nobody wants to help anybody else. Nobody talks. Their pick and roll defense is frightening. Not even just from Kevin Love being involved. It's like Tristan Thompson or LeBron James even. So they're going to be in for a rude awakening even in that first round.
You know, it's interesting. I wonder, can anybody in Eastern Conference do something about it? I know a lot of people are buying into Boston. The mainstream media buys into the Celtics a lot. But Isaiah Thomas hasn't done it in the playoffs before. Can he put it together and actually win 2-3 playoff series in a row? I know they're extremely deep. You know, so Cleveland, they're going to be in top, but they're still a team to beat in the East, aren't they?
Well, we're finally going to get a bunch of really good series in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And we've deserved it for years. We're finally going to get that. But I think it's the Wizards. I don't think that whoever the, you know, mainstream media that's telling the Celtics, I don't think they're overlooking the Wizards. They're the team, I think, that's going to really be able to do the most damage from across the board, even though the Celtics do have some depth if they're all healthy. And they do have Brad Stevens, which is a huge advantage for anybody in the playoffs. But I'm telling you, I'm putting all my money down on John Wall doing a serious run the Cavs and, you know, maybe get to 7 games.
Last year, the Portland Trailblazers were a trendy team down the stretch. They go on the playoff run. And then, you know, this year, people come into the Blazers, they sort of have the same expectations. And I told people, it's not the same team anymore at all. It's not the same team. And they struggled. And I got to tell you why. I watch a lot of Blazers games. And even if you would have told me like 2 months ago that they'd be in this spot, I'd be like, no, it's not happening this year. You and I talked about them, though. I remember you brought up, you know, Aminu had a nice night once when we were talking about him. But Nurkic has been the difference maker. When you got a guy that's giving you 33 and 16 or capable of doing that and such a great passer, and, you know, either one night you're going to have 9 assists or, you know, a bunch of rebounds, you can score, takes a little bit of pressure off of Lillard and McCollum because those two are going to give you 60, 55, 60 on a nightly basis. But it wasn't enough. Now it is. And I think, what, they're 12-3 in their last 15 games. They're peaking at the right time right now.
It's a combination, too, because first of all, a happy Nurkic is a happy team. And if he's not happy, that goes south pretty quick. But so far, it's been a great honeymoon. And their schedule was, I think, arguably the most difficult schedule for the first, like, 65 games of the year. Now they're finally going to get a really nice stretch to finish out the year. Denver is not. So the Blazers are already in the playoffs right now. They're going to hang on to that spot. And whether or not they're going to, you know, be able, it'll be fun in the first round if they're the A spot. But, you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to do too much damage in that first round just because they just don't have the defensive ability to stop, you know, the Warriors or the Spurs, whoever's that first spot.
Coach, I wish we had more time, but we don't. But it's all right. I know you're a busy man, and you've got videos to do and tweets to reply to. Thanks a lot for joining us. Hey, man, playoffs are around the corner. I can't wait to talk playoff ball with you.
Absolutely. Anytime, I'm here for you.
I appreciate that, Nick. Always a pleasure, Coach. Here's Coach Nick with us. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with our DFS lineup and some plays of the day. We've got some really interesting NBA games on tap this evening, including the Houston Rockets and the Portland Trail Blazers. So let's start off with CJ McCollum. He's as hot as the Blazers are of themselves. Like his team, he's on fire. Dropped 39 points on the Denver Nuggets of the other night. He scored 30 or more in two of his last three games. He's averaged 27 points, 5 assists, and 3 boards against the Houston Rockets in two games this year. To me, he's a must play. We're talking about a 45, 50-point potential night on DraftKings. Nawaba on the Lakers, all right? Just signed a contract, extended a 2-year contract. Played about 25 minutes a night for these guys. And at $3,300, we don't really need too much. He's put up 20 or more DK points in two of the last three games. If he can give us 18, 21 DK points, we're in a nice spot. He put up 26 the other night. Still a value pick at $3,300. Trevor Ariza, a player that I've often taken over the years. But he's been on fire as well. He's put up 85 DK points in the last two games. He's hit 7 of his last 14 three-point shots. He's averaged 17 points and 5 boards a game versus the Blazers this year. High total tonight, 230 points in this basketball game. Mirotic has been on fire. He's put up 122 DK points in his last three games, way above value. He's put up 42 or more in two of the last three. Great play tonight at $5,800. It's not like the Cleveland Cavaliers are playing defense. They've given up 114 points a game over the last six games. Clint Capella has put up 30 or more DK points in four of the last five. Crazy off from the field. He's actually hit 32 of his last 43 shots, including a 9 of 10 the other night against the Warriors. Kyrie Irving had a bad night the other night, but I expect him to get back on track this evening and give us, you know, 40, 42, 43 DK points. Georgie Dieng's put up 32 or more in three straight games. Lakers terrible in the paint. Ricky Rubio, very consistent. He's put up 40 more DK points. 5 of his last 10 with a 50-plus and a 60-plus mixed in there. And once again, it is against the Los Angeles Lakers. As far as our plays of the day are concerned, we have the NIT final from MSG tonight. TCU have been playing great basketball, so have Tech, but I think TCU are a little bit better overall. Both good defensively, but they got a better offense. Give me TCU minus the 4. I think it just gets there over the 133.5. Let's go over the number. Lakers and T-Wolves have gone over the number the last 6 times that they played. Clippers and Suns, this should be a track meet as well, over 220. Portland Trailblazers, these guys are red hot, man. They're like 12-3. Last 15. They're getting 2 points on their home court. I'm going to take the Blazers against the visiting Houston Rockets. Rockets and Blazers. Total is 230 points in this basketball game. No reason why it doesn't get there. Going to be a track meet. And our public, Johnny Public parlays have been working in the NHL as of late. So let's take a shot with the Montreal Canadiens. Panthers have lost 13 of the last 18. And we'll take the Boston Bruins. And if the Bruins don't win, we'll just blame Reed in the booth. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours. We'll be right back.